Okay, so we had seen so far that Chazal have the authority to tell us to at least ignore a mitzvah min HaTorah, relevant to us this week, the mitzvah of Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, and we saw that it may go beyond that, that maybe not only can they tell us to ignore it, but they can negate it, that it's a mitzvah no longer exists in that form, that if one were to blow shofar this Shabbos, there wouldn't be any kiyum, there wouldn't be any fulfillment, the whole mitzvah is no longer on the books. And yesterday we tried to understand how that could be a possibility. We discussed whether it was mitzvah babi avera maybe as a possibility, or maybe Chazal have that included in their authority, that they can not only direct our behavior, but can control the impact of their gezeros, and they can fine-tune the gezera however they want it, up to and including the erasing of a mitzvah from the books. And we connected that to a larger question about the scope of Lo Sasser. The Rambam's choice for the source is Lo Sasser just telling us we have to behave a certain way, we can't rebel against the rabbis, but there's no authority beyond us having to listen to them. Or, like Rav Yosef Engel in his camp, that maybe there's more. Maybe that the gezeiros of Chazal are endorsed by God, and therefore, yes, they can impact the nature of a mitzvah, they can impact objects, etc., etc. They don't rely on just the obedience to Lo Sasser in order to function. So with that, we have to consider another angle of the question, that the Gemara, yes, tells us Yesh Koach Lakir Davar Min HaTorah, and that's the part of the sentence we were focusing on until now, Lakir Davar Min HaTorah. But what about the rest of the phrase? Yesh Koach Dechachamim Lakir Davar Min HaTorah B'Shev Va'al Tasa. So let's focus today on how to understand that part of the phrase. What does it mean, Shev al tasa? The language literally translates to passively. Right? Sit back and don't do anything. Shev al tasa, sit back and don't do anything. So is that the totality of what it means? Is it about behavior? Or is it another way of saying mitzvah sase versus lo sase? We understand, for example, that the nature of things, roughly speaking, is that the rabbis can tell us not to blow shofar on Shabbos, not to take a lulav, not to wear tzitzis with shatnas. But apparently they can't tell us to violate averos, meaning they're not going to tell us to eat non-kosher food. They're not going to tell us to be machal Shabbos. They're not going to tell us to wear shatnas, to eat on Yom Kippur. So those examples are straightforward enough. But what about more complicated examples? Is it defined by categorization? It's a mitzvah sase or a mitzvah lo sase? Or is it defined by behavior? As long as you are acting in a passive manner, that's called shev al tasa. And if you are doing something, what we call in English a sin of commission, you're doing something, and we understand that to be worse than a sin of omission, to leave out something. So is that the distinction? It's all about you are behaving a certain way versus not behaving a certain way? So, for example, when we have a prohibition of the Torah, like we spoke about in the Parsha for Kiseitse, we have a prohibition of Torah not to delay burial, lo salin nivlaso. So one would violate that passively by not performing a burial. So is that called shev al tasa? Or did you say, no, that's called violating a lo sase, and therefore that's called kum vase? So this question, how to classify Shev al Tasa, was posed by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. And it's a very important one. And he didn't start the issue. the issue was before him, and it applies to other areas of halacha as well. Because there are at least three areas of halacha where we seem to have distinctions along these lines. Now, what are the other two? If you got to see more Makaris this morning, I gave you some that were relevant. What are the two other areas in halacha which have a distinction seemingly of the same nature? Anyone want to help me out? One possibility is, well, let's say a finger.
Because it's not a super confident hand raising.
Okay, we like
my really confident. Means by area of halacha, like the example of sudden betzitzis.
Oh, so that's related to here, that it's related to yesh koach l'akor davar min haTorah. But sudden kilayim does bring us into another one of the examples. And that is the sugya of kvod habrios. Right? The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, and actually four other places, at least five times in Shas, the Gemara says that one cannot wear shatnez, even if taking it off would be embarrassing, would be a affront to kavod habrios, because it's a chil Hashem, it's an active aveir. But the Gemara ultimately concludes that there are situations where kvod habrios does win, where human dignity does prevail. And a couple of categories. One we actually also spoke about in Parsha Shir, when we spoke about the idea of Hashava Saveda, that was also a Kiseitse topic, that Hashava Saveda moves aside for kvod habrios. And Dinim Drabanan move aside for kvod habrios. And the Gemara concludes, Sheva Al Tasa Shaini, that if it's a Sheva Al Tasa prohibition, or rather it's a, let's say, a Bitul Aseh, if that's the way we want to formulate it, Kavod HaBrios could allow for a violation even of Torah law if it's B'Sheva Al Tasa. So that's another major area where you find this distinction. That Kavod HaBrios can win out against Torah law b'sheva al tasa, but not b'kum v'ase. So in that Gemara, it's clear that wearing shatnez is called a kum v'ase. So that you cannot do even if Kavod HaBrios is an issue. But apparently, if it's only sheva al tasa, there's what to talk about. So the question of defining what is sheva al tasa is relevant for that area too. And so if you want to know when does Kavod HaBrios win, you have to figure out how are we defining Sheva Al Tasa. And just to give an example from that discussion, if you had a chance to see, it was the last source, I think, or second to last source I put on, was the Tosus and Shavuos. That Tosus and Shavuos raised the question that the Gemara seems to say that a Talmud Chacham has to come and give edus on some other matter, not just about defending himself, it's a different discussion, but he has to give edus on some other matter, even if the Bezdin is a lower Bezdin, and it's beneath his dignity. So it's not within his kavod to come to this Bezdin, he has to do it anyway. So Tosus and Shavuos, on Lamed Amid Beis, Tosus asked the question, but why is that true? If he would just stay home and not come to the court, that would be a Sheva Al Tasa. And Kavod HaBrios wins over a Sheva Al Tasa. So why don't we say that that fits the formula? Let him sit home and not give edus in this Bezdin that's beneath his dignity. Satosis gives two answers. One answer is that no, this is called Kumvase. Why? Because maybe the situation is that we need to clarify some halachic matter, and if it's not clarified, someone else is going to violate the Nisr actively. So therefore, his passive sitting it out will bring about an active Chil Hashem, even though he himself is acting passively. Tosus has another answer, which is also fascinating, that maybe it's all qualitative and quantitative considerations, that not all kavod is equal. So yes, to be humiliated, that's one thing. To be a little bit beneath your protocol, that may be a gnai cotton, Tosa says, only a small impingement on your honor, and that doesn't really rank as far as kavod abrios and outweighing other things. But Tosus essentially is addressing this issue. How do we define sheval tase, what's called passive, regarding this distinction? And another area, which is part of Hilchos Sukkos, and it's part of a lot of areas of halacha, but it happens to be recorded within Hilchos Sukkos, so it makes it seasonal. What's the third area of halacha where this comes up? That we have a rule. The Rama brings a rule based on some Rishonim. It's not really based on the Gemara. It's based on a few comments in Rishonim. And the Gemara says in Ksubis that there's a limit to how much staka you should give. That even how much you're really allowed to give under normal circumstances. You shouldn't give more than a fifth of your money to tzedakah, because we're concerned you'll become impoverished and you'll have to take from tzedakah. So the Rama in Hilchos Lulav in Tavkuf Nun Vav, the Rama extends this to mitzvos. You don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money on mitzvos. If it's going to cost all your money to get a lulav and esrog, you don't have to do it. So there he brings a distinction also from Rishonim, but not everyone agreed with it. But he brought the distinction that this is true if we're dealing with a positive mitzvah. To get a lulav, an esrog, tefillin, whatever it is, then you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money. But if it's a lo sase, then that's a whole different story. Then you have to be ready to do whatever it takes not to violate a lo sase. So it's a third area where you seem to have this distinction also. And once again, commentaries ask, how are we defining our terms? Are we talking about what volume of Sefer HaMitzvos it in, whether you call it Nase or Lo Sase? Or are we talking about behavior? And it makes a difference. So let's say, for example, many achronim struggled greatly with the question that if we say you only have to give up to a fifth of your money for tzedakah, you only should, well, what happens if somebody comes to you and says he needs life-saving surgery? A life or death issue. And the surgery is going to cost a fortune. So why don't we say you have to give him everything you got? Because the Torah says, Lo samod al dam reecha. Do not stand by. It's phrased as a lo sase. To not help when you could is phrased as a prohibition. Maybe we should say you got to give everything you got to not violate lo samod al dam reecha. But what would the manner of violating it be? It would be passive. You would just not act. So how does that fit in the formula? So in these three areas of halacha, you find Achronim raising this question. And it's very possible that the answer is not the same for all three. They have overlapping terms, but maybe they have different rules. But these are the three areas where you find this question. We have to define our terminology. What do we mean when we say Sheva Altasa? Does it mean my behavior should be passive as opposed to active, regardless of what language the Torah uses, regardless of whether we call that a los asay or an asay? Or are we talking categorically? It's not about your behavior. It's about one volume is called mitzvah asay, one volume is called the los asays. The los asays are more chomer than the asays. And we have to see it as defined along those terms. So this is the question of Bachanan raises here, and we'll see how it ultimately ties in with the other issues that one can discuss in a very interesting way. We also saw yesterday as kind of a bridge that Avnei Nezer was working off a whole different understanding of Sheva Al Tasa. And Ari asked me this morning, he said, we're talking about Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, and we're also talking about Sheval Tasa. The language is intention. Akiras Davar Min HaTorah sounds very active if you translate it in its literal sense. You're uprooting the Torah, not just ignoring it, but uprooting it. That sounds very active. And Sheval Tasa, that sounds like you're ignoring. That sounds passive. And indeed, the Avnei Nezer that we mentioned yesterday basically says, like Ari, that the language forces us to harmonize them. And because it says Sheval Tasa, that means we're not rewriting the Torah. And if you blow the shofar on Shabbos, there is a mitzvah, even though you're not supposed to do it. Because the rabbis can tell you, sit it out. They can't pull it out of the Torah, because that would be Akira B'Yadayim. But that's an unusual interpretation. The other two possibilities are more likely, that we're either talking about your behavior in the moment. Is it considered to be passive or active? Or we're talking categorically that somehow we see things differently when it comes to mitzvah saseh as opposed to mitzvah lo saseh. Now, the second question we have to discuss today is, if you vote for one or the other, maybe we should take a quick vote. What do you think is more likely? Zoom, we can do that. You can just put yes or no. So what do you think is more likely? Do you think that it's more about the category or it's more about the behavior? Why would you think one or the other? What makes you feel that one is more logical possibility than the other? So let's consider that for a second. Right? So if we're making a distinction, Chazal can do A, they can't do B. Why? Why is this a relevant place to draw the line? Valvo?
Can I just ask for a clarification before?
Yeah, sure.
So how did we square up this term of Yesh Koach La'akor and the Sheval Taisa? Because then it doesn't seem to be actually uprooting it.
Right. So we can't really square them. If we want to interpret, we want to focus on the language and interpret them both literally. So it is pretty much of a clash. So one answer is the language isn't really what it's about. And if you want to really harmonize the language, so then you have to say that Akor does not translate literally and favor the view of Rabbi Akiva Eiger and those that it just means ignore, it doesn't mean uproot. And ignoring is passive. That's if you're focused on that question, like Ari and the Avnei Nezer were focused on. However, if we assume the language is just a way of conveying it, but we see Sheval Tasa as referring to something outside the language, then that presents the question a little differently. So assuming Sheval Tasa is not talking about what, it really, the Avnei Nezer really rereads the Gemara, really differently than all the Rishonim. Because all the Rishonim are assuming Sheval Tasa is about something else, about something that you're doing in the moment. And he's reading it as how Chazal are relating to the process. And that the whole back and forth in the Gemara there about Kumbase versus Sheval Tasa, it's all about how do they relate to the Torah itself. Can they get up and change the Torah? Or can they only sit back and say, don't do this, but they can't actually change the reality of the mitzvahs? So if you focus on these other two possibilities, that either it's about your behavior at the moment, you shouldn't do anything active, but you can be passive. You can do sins of omission, but not sins of commission. Or if you say that, no, it's about categories, we're defining our terms here by assay versus los assay. So is one possibility more logical to you than the other? Why would you use either one? Why would this be the dividing line? Zach, you want to comment?
Maybe it's like has to do with if you violate something in an active way, like in a behavioral sense,
mm-hmm.
so you're more aware that you're violating something that God commanded, and then that would create like a chil Hashem, like that wouldn't be worth it.
Okay, but maybe there's just something about active behavior. The same way in general culture outside of halacha, we seem to think a sin of commission is worse than a sin of omission. So maybe there's just something worse about active behavior that goes against the rules than just not doing something you're supposed to do. And that if you have to choose, so better, we want to avoid active offenses. In general, active sins are more offensive than passive sins. And for some reason, which isn't clear to us yet, we're forced to choose, and maybe, okay, it's always better, like we find in other contexts, shev al tasa adif, right? Sometimes you have that phrase when you have, and that would seem to point in this direction, right? If you have a very difficult decision to make, and there's no way you can really resolve it. So very often we say, shev al tasa adif, right? It's okay that if you really don't know what the better path is, so first, do no harm. That if you just sit back, you're probably not doing as much harm than if you take an active step, which might be the wrong step. If you know you might be doing the wrong thing either way, you'd rather sit out and not do the right thing than actively do the wrong thing. Right? You've heard that attitude before, that sometimes shev al tasa is simply the safest of two paths, that neither one seems great. Hi. Kiva, you raising?
With shev al tasa, it's saying like it might be better just to not do anything.
Uh-huh.
Like in the place of safek d'oraisa l'chomer and safek d'rabanan l'kula, which direction would be l'chomer? Like, would it be more machmir to...
Well, it depends. Each one would have its own consideration. That if you're dealing with a positive mitzvah, so then the l'chomer is to assume that you should do something. If you're dealing with an Avera, the Lachumra is to assume that you should not do it. That's each one by itself, even without the clash. So this might be an idea. So for example, if you find yourself stuck between two possibilities, so at least Shev al Tasa Adif. Right? That at least you're better off not actively violating anything. Like let's say... I won't say which one because the halacha has ways to define. Let's say your two parents are telling you conflicting instructions. Right? So let's leave out which one is which because there are hilchos kibud av v'eim that direct this, but just logically outside the halacha. Right? So let's say one parent says, you better do this. And the other parent says to you better not do this. Right? So you have a direct contradiction between the two. So... what's the safer approach? You have no winning path here, right? But what's the safer approach? If I do the thing one parent's telling me not to do, that really seems like I'm flying in their face. If I don't do it, okay, I'm just conflicted. But it's not as blatant an offense as doing the thing that one parent is telling me you better not do. So we have shev al tasa adif. So is that what's going on here? A general reluctance to do something actively, which is worse. So it's interesting. Here, Bachana doesn't really focus on this, but this is an interesting example. If you saw the Chidushei Anshei Shem put on this list this morning, and some of you had a hard time finding it, so I sent around a picture of it. So the Chidushei Anshei Shem, he alludes to this in a very interesting way, because he's commenting on the Ran, that the Gemara in Shabbos says that Neros Chanukah take priority over Kiddush. So if you don't have enough money to buy both Chanukah candles and wine for Kiddush, so then you should prioritize the Chanukah candles, which is surprising a little bit because Chanukah candles are dinim d'rabbanan, so a rabbinic mitzvah. And the Ran raises the issue that Kiddush is a Torah mitzvah. Discussing that yesterday, right? Zachar Soma Shabbos L'Kadsho. So how could we prioritize the mitzvah d'Rabbanan over the mitzvah min HaTorah of Kiddush? So the answer he gives, we also discussed yesterday, is that the mitzvah min HaTorah of Kiddush doesn't require wine necessarily. It can fulfill the mitzvah d'Oraisa without that. So it's not really a blatant d'Rabbanan d'Oraisa conflict. So the Chidushei Anshei Shem over there on the side of the page asks, Well, why is that a question to begin with? We know Yesh Koach Laker Davar Min HaTorah, that the rabbis can make a decision that they can uproot a mitzvah min HaTorah. So maybe this is another example. They decided that Hanukkah candles are more important than Kiddush wine, so they uprooted the mitzvah min HaTorah here. And they said, prioritize our Hanukkah candles over the Torah's Kiddush wine, even if you were to say that Kiddush wine is part of the mitzvah min HaTorah. So the answer that Chedushei Anshei Shem gives is, no, they wouldn't do that. Because the whole point is they're trying to avoid active violations of anything. So they'll say, all right, we're worried about Chil Shabbos, and we're worried there might be a conflict between the positive mitzvah of Shofar and the negative violation of Chil Shabbos. So we'll say, better sit out the Shofar rather than risk the active violation of Hilchos Shabbos. So that's what's generally driving it. They're worried about the active violation of Shatnez, so they said, sit out Tzitzis, so you shouldn't actively violate Shatnez. It's all motivated by this desire not to actively do something wrong. So when you have that conflict, it's a very interesting perspective, because you don't find it expressed this way in many other sources, what the Chedushei Anshei Shem is saying here. That this essentially is what's driving everything. We just don't want to actively make any mistakes. First, do no harm. That's our motto. So we don't want to actively violate any halachos. So that's more important to us than distinguishing between deraisas and drabanas. If you're trying to decide in a conflict, whether it is, you can only choose one path, so we're more interested in whether one is active or passive than we are whether one is derais or derabban. And therefore, we'll say, better to not blow shofar than to risk Shabbos violation. Better to not wear tzitzis than to risk Shatnez violation. But when it comes to Kiddush and Hanukkah candles, they're both positive mitzvos. So there wouldn't be any logic to say that we should prefer the mitzvah derabanan of Neris Chanukah over the mitzvah derais of Kiddush. Either way, we're only dealing with positive commandments. It's a whole different presentation, a very interesting Chidushei Anshei Shem. So maybe that's the whole ikkar here, that we're just looking at trying to avoid sticking our head in the gunfire. Two shots coming from different directions, let's just sit down and hide. Belville, are you raising your hand?
Yeah. So then why do we choose Hanukkah candles over the Durabanan way to do Kiddush?
So apparently the Gemara says that Pursume Nisa is such a big deal that pushes Hanukkah candles ahead of the line. So that part is in the Gemara. But the Rishonim ask, but still, Pursume Nisa is also Durabanan. So, now this happens to be a sugi in Psachim in the 10th parak, so God willing, we'll get to that. It's based on a mission in the 10th parak, this whole priority of Pursume Nisa. And where that comes from is really based on a mission in the 10th parak of Psachim. But that, the Gemara takes as a given here, that Pursume Nisa is a special enhancing element. But the Rishonim say, okay, but what about mitzvahs d'oraisa and mitzvahs d'rabbanan? Isn't that a bigger factor? How could we set aside a mitzvah d'oraisa for Drabana? So what the Chedushei Anshei Shem here says is, well, maybe it's just an example of Yesh Koach. It's what we're talking about. They have the ability to uproot mitzvahs d'oraisa. But then he says, no, that wouldn't be the answer there, because there would be no motive to do that if we're just dealing with mitzvahs aseh in both directions. In other words, what drives the whole idea of Akiras Davar Min HaTorah is the fear of alos aseh, or the fear of active violations, formulated that way, the fear of active behavior against the Torah. So that's one way to say it. We just want to pick the least harmful route, and we're keeping our head down. Sheva al tasa. You know, some of my friends tell me, some of my friends in the rabbinate would say that they like to grow beards, but their wives don't let them. So shave stands for shalom bias. They shave to maintain shalom bias. So I only started keeping my beard after I got married, because my wife told me she liked the beard better. So I said, for me, it's shave al tasa. So it's a more passive approach to the shaving. So in any event, so shave al taisik could just mean, okay, be passive. Or that would all fit if we're basing it on our behavior, that we don't want to do active offensive things. But if we define it based on Sefer HaMitzvot, says it in the Aseh volume or the Los Aseh volume, why would you make that distinction? Why should that be the issue? Oh, this Chazal can do, but that Chazal can't do? Why should we use that terminology at all, or that standard? So presumably that's based on the assumption that in a more halachic sense, that Aseh's are more chamer than Los Aseh's. And that itself is informed by the fact that Los Aseh's are usually accompanied by an onesh in the Torah. The Torah has onshin for most Los Aseh's. And for most mitzvah saseh, there is no onesh in the Torah. So the assumption that onesh represents a level of severity within them also, that misa is more than malchus, etc. So no onesh is presumably more kal than any onesh. So that would seem to mean that all the mitzvah saseh are pretty much more kal than the mitzvah lo saseh categorically. Now, there are interesting exceptions. So, for example, Bris Milah does have an onesh, right? So, Bris Milah, if one doesn't have a bris, so one is subject to an onesh of karis. So, maybe that would mess up the equation here. But, maybe that it could answer its own question, because some of the Rishonim ask, and maybe we could look at this a little bit next week, some of the Rishonim ask, if the rabbi said, don't blow shofar on Shabbos and don't take a lulav on Shabbos, how come they let bris milas happen on Shabbos on the eighth day? Why didn't they cancel that also? That also involves tools. So how come they didn't say that the bris milah also should not happen on Shabbos, even though we know that by Torah law it's supposed to, but same thing for shofar and lulav, so why didn't the rabbi say, no bris milah on Shabbos? Many Rishonim asked that question, and there are many important answers. And we could look at that next week. But one possible answer you could say is that maybe if we define it by Chumrah, so maybe Bris Milah should be grouped with the Los Aseh's. Because since there's an Onesh, if that's the clue, so then maybe it's not really about behavior, it's about categories. And even a positive mitzvah like Bris Milah should be grouped categorically with the Los Aseh's because it has the Onesh. Maybe. Okay, so yes, Vavo.
Does like the Rambam or anybody else who counts mitzvahs, Aseh's and Los Aseh's mention not having a Milah as one of the mitzvahs Los Aseh?
No, not that I understand. Not that as far as I think it's always considered an Aseh. So for that purpose, it's clearly a positive mitzvah, but the question is, maybe the reason to draw a line in this area, in Yesh Koach, to draw a line between where the Rambam would put it or not, is based on the assumption that Aseh's have a different level of severity. And therefore, maybe Bris Milah might be an exception, even though it's in that volume, but maybe, that theoretical volume, but maybe still, for this purpose, it should be categorized with Los Aseh's because of the Onesh component.
Isn't it just a question of ranking? Like for Lotus, you could rank them based on their ownage, but
right, that's what it would mean, right? That basically using that ranking system, so then maybe the Chazal have a certain firepower, and the firepower only works for a level 5 and below, and not for a level 6 to 10. So they can do Aseh's, maybe they can't do Los Aseh's. Maybe. The Bris Milah question has many answers. Many Rishonim bring that up. There are many fascinating approaches to consider. We'll come back to that. For now, just mentioning this possible angle on it, that maybe it's grouped as a Los Aseh. That's a very major question in the Rishonim, why Bris Milah escapes this whole gezeirah. So now, with that framework, these are the two other questions Rav Ochanan had asked. The question we dealt with till now, what does the Akira mean? And now these two questions. How do we look at Sheva Al Tasa? Why is the line drawn the way it is? And what does it mean practically in the complicated examples? So let's now focus on what does it mean practically. So one thing you see is that this seems to be the issue in Tosfos, in Yevamos, the first of the sources this morning. Right, Tosfos and Yevamos picking up from the Gemara, when the Gemara says that an example of Sheva Al Tasa is tzitzis and shatnez, don't wear tzitzis, even though the Torah says to, don't do it because of the fear of shatnez. That's a Sheva Al Tasa. So Tosfos says, that's a Sheva Al Tasa. But you'll be walking around with a garment without tzitzis. That's very active. You'll run and you'll play sports and you'll run the marathon and you'll jump up and down and your garment's not going to have tzitzis on it. That's not passive. So Tosfos is forced to kind of do acrobatics and say, well, maybe the chiyuv only comes when it's already on, and just wearing it isn't active. Putting it on would have been active, but wearing it is not called active. That's on Tosfos. So Shagasariye, commenting on that, Shagasariye says, I don't get the whole question. Tzitzis is a mitzvah saseh. Therefore, Chazal have the authority to say, turn that one off. Don't pay attention to this mitzvah saseh. Doesn't matter whether you're putting it on or sitting with it or jumping up and down and dancing. It's not about what you're doing. It's about the fact that it's a positive mitzvah. So that seems to be the issue between Tosfos and the Shagas Aryeh. Is it that we define it based on your behavior, which forces Tosfos to get very specific about where the chiyuv is and isn't? Or we could say, no, the whole problem doesn't even come up, that it's a positive mitzvah, and therefore it's within their authority. It's within the authority vested in them. So far, so good? So now here's something really fascinating. This seems to be also a machlokes between the Ran and the Rashba. And want something really elegant here. See that the Rashba probably appears at least three times l'shitaso on this issue. What is the machlokes, the Ran and the Rashba, in the first place? So there is a Gemara in Ksubis, if you got a chance to see this morning. And Gimel Amud Beis and Dalet Amud Aleph, for the Gemara talks about a crazy, sad kind of situation, which unfortunately probably happens, Rahman al Islam, more often than you think, because it's a lot of tensions at a time of a wedding. So the Gemara says, let's say you have a wedding, it's about to happen. And everything is all set, and it's past the point of no return. The caterer cannot give you a refund at this point, everything's out on the table. And the chassan's father, or the kala's mother, unfortunately passes away right then. So now you have to deal with both a wedding and a funeral. So what do you do? Ultimate roller coaster of life. So the Gemara says the wedding is prioritized. So we set aside the funeral for a moment, then we go through with the chuppah. And then the funeral happens afterwards. And then now you have two other conflicts. You have Sheva Brachos, which should take a week, and Shiva, which should take a week. So the Gemara says that just like the wedding came before the funeral, so the Shiva waits till after Sheva Brachos. The Shiva is pushed off for a week. So that all is fascinating. And we understand the mechanics because we assume la halacha that Shiva and Sheva Brachos are both dinim d'rabbanan. They're not Torah obligations. They may go back to Moshe Rabbeinu, but they're very old dinim d'rabbanan, but still not in the Torah itself. So the rabbis can set the rules and they can decide, okay, Shiva now is going to wait until after Sheva Brachos. The Shiva that we ordained, that the rabbis instituted, we can make the rules. It'll wait till after Sheva Brachos in this case. But some of the Rishonim raised the question, and the Ran and a few others raised the question, that there is a view in Rishonim, it's the Rambam and the Gaonim, that the first day of Shiva is Min HaTorah. At least one day of Avelus, Yom Yisu Kvura, is Min HaTorah. So you want to tell me the Din D'Rabbanan of Shiva can wait until afterwards? Fine. But what about the first day of Shiva? That's Min HaTorah. How do they have the authority to push it off? That's coming from the Torah itself. That's the question a number of the Rishonim ask. So the Ran and the Rashba, if you got a chance to see, what do they answer this question? What's the answer according to them? Yesh koach lakar davar min haTorah b'shev al tasa. That the rabbis have the authority to do that sometimes, that even if this is from Torah law, the rabbis are allowed to do this. Now, parenthetically, it's just interesting because this is a different kind of an example from what we've seen till now. How is this different from the cases we've been talking about until now? It doesn't seem, yeah, Valvel, half a hand, more than a finger, less than a hand.
They're both mitzvah sase. There's not like a
way that they are both mitzvah sase. If we're motivated by the mitzvah, then that's itself a approach to consider. But it seems also that the motivation isn't even mitzvahs at all in this case, right? Because the concern the Gemara was talking about the catering. It's not clear whether it's a mitzvah that's concerning it or whether it's a hefsid that's concerning it, just that it's going to be a big loss for the family. Although maybe that's only about the wedding versus the funeral part. So you have to figure out exactly what the motive is for the Sakiris Davar Min HaTorah. So that itself puts it in seemingly a different category than what we've seen till now, which is interesting by itself. But that's not the question they're focused on. What they're focused on is, wait a minute, says the Ran, or the Chidushi Anshei Shem, if you saw, he asked the question more clearly. But the fact is, the Ran addresses it. The Ran asks it implicitly, and he gives his answer. But the Chidushi Anshei Shem spells out the question more. So what do you mean, Sheval Tasa? You're going to party during the week of Avelus? An Avel is not allowed to be partying. So for an Avel to be celebrating during his week of Avelus, isn't that called Kumvase? Isn't that an active violation? How can the Avel celebrate during that week? That's an active violation. Or that day, it's an active violation of the Torah obligation of Avelus. So the Ran addresses the question himself. And the Ran says that Taka, that first day is going to be awkward. That first day should not actively party. He doesn't sit Shiva. He doesn't accept comforters that day. But push the partying off till the second day. Because the first day, Daraisa, we can ignore the Avelus, but we can't do anything actively to contradict it. Because it's got to be Sheva Al Tasa. So the Ran assumes that that is indeed an issue. Now the Rashba does not have that condition. The Rashba just says, Yesh Koach, that's what helps us here. That's what makes this work. So what do you think is the difference? What's behind this difference between the Ran and the Rashba? Why is the Ran saying, make sure not to party on day one? And why does the Rashba not say that? Valvel, got a whole hand now, so this is going to be a good one.
Yeah. Potentially how you understand Sheva Al Tasa, right?
Okay, yeah.
But it's kind of half a hand, because I'm not sure I can say it out clearly.
So it's a half a hand. It's a waved hand.
Yeah.
Well, I think Menachem has a... Did you raise your hand before?
Just the difference between defining it versus behavior or categorical.
Oh, okay, right. So who's which?
So the Ram is saying it's behavior, because it's all about making sure it's not done passively, while the Rashba is just, it's just categorical.
Right, so the Rashba, we have to figure it out. What the Rashba seems to be saying is that Avelus, even though it involves do's and don'ts, it involves things that people do or don't do, but it's all a subset. Those are all details of a positive imperative. That if there is a Daraisa of Avelus, it's a positive commandment to mourn the deceased, which practically manifests itself by things that are done and things that aren't done. So things that look like Isurim in behavior. But they're not, practically speaking, Isurim. They are all subsets of a positive imperative of Avelus. So the Rashba sees it categorically and says they uprooted Avelus that day. So there are no Hilchos Avelus that are relevant. Any of the do's or don'ts, doesn't matter what the behavior is. All of Avelus has been canceled for that day. While the Ran was seeing it as behavior related, so therefore what it means is you don't have to do anything Avelus-like, but you also shouldn't do anything that contradicts Avelus, because it's all about behavior. Now, here's the really fun part. So if the Rashba is really seeing it categorically, maybe that shows up in at least two more places. One is in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. So it's seasonal, but it's a more general comment. That the Rashba, in the middle of Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tazayin, the Rashba writes, this goes to a question that Ari brought up on day one of this sugya, the issues of Baal Tosef and Baal Tigra, how they relate here. So this actually comes up in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah specifically, but it discusses the question of, if you have a mitzvah min haTorah, and the rabbis tell you, do it again, do it a second time, is that Baal Tosef? Is that called adding on to a mitzvah if they tell you to do a mitzvah twice? So the Rashba says that no. You can tell that it's not Baal Tosef when they tell you to do a mitzvah twice. Because let's look at the inverse. We have a prohibition of Baal Tigra. And yet, we know there's a policy of Yesh Koach Laker Davar Min HaTorah, that the rabbis can tell you not to do a mitzvah. They can tell you not to blow shofar on Shabbos. They can tell you not to wear tzitzis with shatnas. So apparently, that's not Baal Tigra. So if it's not Baal Tigra when they tell you not to do a mitzvah, so paralleling that, it's not Baal Tosef if they tell you to do a mitzvah twice. So that's the Rashba statement over there. So the Turi Evan, the author of the Shagas Aryeh, in his commentary to Rosh Hashanah, the Turi Evan asks an interesting question. He says, how do you know there's no Baal Tigra here? Why is he assuming that when the rabbi said, don't blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, that that's not Baal Tigra? Maybe it is Baal Tigra. Maybe it's Baal Tigra, but you know what? Maybe the rabbis uprooted that too. They were on an uprooting spree, and they uprooted both Shofar and Baal Tigra. So why would the Rashba not have said that? If we assume the Rashba is Lishitaso, right? So why would the Rashba not have said that that's a possibility here? Because what is Baal Tigra? Alosase. So if the Rashba thinks categorically, so it could be that no, shofar on Shabbos, that we can deal with, because that's a mitzvah sase. But Baal Tigra would be a problem, because Baal Tigra is a lo sase. So therefore, that's off limits. Baal Tigra is off limits. And apparently it's the Rashba l'shitaso that we look at things categorically. And even though one would have violated Baal Tigra passively in this case, that's not acceptable because as a lo sase, it's off limits. So that's consistent. That's the Rashba l'shitaso, because it would be that behavior they can tell you to do. They can tell you to act passively, but they cannot uproot a lo sase. A mitzvah sase of Avelus they can do regardless of behavior. But a mitzvah lo sase of Baal Tigra also regardless of behavior that they can't touch. So that's two Rashbis L'shitaso. Here's, ready for a third one? So, the Gemara Masech is Gittin. Very important and underappreciated Gemara. Because one of the most misunderstood concepts in contemporary halacha is, and it has implications for the whole halachic system, is Prusbul. The Torah says that comes the Shemitah year, you have to cancel all your loans. And Hillel instituted that if you have a document called a Prusbul, so the loans would not be canceled and they could be collected after Shemitah. So this is a very misunderstood halacha, because it's often taken as an example that, oh, the rabbis can do whatever they want, that the Torah never gets in the way. If they want to engineer a solution, whatever they want to do, they can find a way to do it. Just like the Torah said, you can't collect loans after Shemitah, they found a way, and boom. So it's a severe misunderstanding of Prusbul for a lot of reasons, some of which we could talk about a different time. But one thing just to start with is the Gemara in Gittin addresses this head on. And the Gemara says straight out that there is no Doraisa of Shemitah that is affecting Prusbul. That the assumption of Prusbul, Gemara says explicitly, is that Shemitah Bezman Hazeh, Shemitah's Ksafim, at least Bezman Hazeh, is Drabana. That the Torah obligation of canceling loans is not in effect for whatever reason nowadays, and there's only a rabbinic obligation to cancel loans. And because of that, they were able to institute Prusbul and to address it. So that prompts the Gemara to ask from a different direction. Gemara says, wait a minute, that's a problem. Because what you're saying is that by Torah law, there is no Shemitah. So by Torah law, you have to pay back your loans. If you borrowed money, even if Rosh Hashanah passes and the Shemitah year passes, you're going to have to pay it back. And the rabbis ordained Shemitah Drabbanan, the rabbis came and said, you don't have to pay it back? Isn't that a violation of Lo Sigzol? Right? You're not going to pay back your loans that the Torah requires you to pay back, and the rabbis say you don't have to? It's Lo Sigzol. So the Gemara has two answers. One answer is Hefker Bezdin Hefker, that the rabbis have the authority to regulate monetary law, and they can step in and make such a policy. Or the other answer is Shev Al Tasa, right? Which sounds like it's invoking our principle that yes, they can tell you passively, sit home and don't pay back your loans. And if you look at Rashi, so Rashi over there says, yeah, this is an example of Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, that the rabbis have the authority, b'shev al tasa, to uproot Torah law, as long as it's passive. So they're not telling you, in the concern of Lo Sigzol here, they're not telling you to go rob a bank. They're telling you not to pay back the money that you already have. So to rob a bank, that they could never tell you to do. That wouldn't be shev al tasa. But to hold on to the money that's still in your pocket, shev al tasa, that's within Akiras Davar Min HaTorah. Okay, so that's fine for Rashi, but wait a minute. What would the Rashba say? What would the Rashba say about this? Right, because according to him, if it's categorical, so Lo Sigzol is a Lo Sase. How could you be told to violate Lo Sigzol through this principle? If it's about behavior, so fine, so you're not paying back. But if it's about losa, says, oh, it's a problem. So I remember many years ago, we learned this Gemara with my chavrusa, by Yaakov Lublowski Shlita. So we had a brilliant idea to address what the Rashba would say. You know what our brilliant idea was? It's a good eitzah all the time. We opened up the Rashba to see what he says on that Gemara. So if you look at the Rashba over there, you'll see that he actually interprets the Gemara differently than Rashi. So it's a little complicated how, but you could take a look. But the point being that l'shitaso he would have to, because if it's all defined categorically, so then it's not going to work to say that they could be oker l'sigzal. They only could do it for something that is an assay. So it seems like the Rashba is consistent in all these three examples that the issue is it assay or a lo assay? While other Rishonim maybe see it as more behavior defined. And it seems to be a lot of the Rishonim, because that seems to be how Tosfos was coming at us in Yuvamos, and how the Ran was saying, and the Chiddushi and Sheshem, and also how perhaps the Rashi is saying in Gittin. So it seems like a number of Rishonim are defining it as behavior. And it's really only the Rashba here who, and maybe a few others, but primarily the Rashba, who is consistently sticking to the view that it's categorical. So now, if you think about it, these three questions all come together. Because if we want to know, is it categorical or is it about behavior? So we already set the stage for what would drive one or the other, right? Why would you draw the lines based on Sheval Tasa at all? Why is that a relevant consideration? So if you want to say that it's based on categories and the assumption that losases are more chumer than ases, so maybe what we're saying is the rabbis have power, but the power is limited. The power extends to the weaker mitzvos of the mitzvos aseh, but not to the more chumer mitzvos of los aseh. But if you say that it's about keeping your head down and not getting in the middle of something, shev al tasa adif, so why would you say that? Then presumably, yes, there's a general preference to not do any harm, to not get into a fight. But the whole premise is that both forces are acting on you at the same time. That in other words, for this Shabbos, you have the Torah saying, you better blow shofar this Shabbos. And you have the rabbi saying, you better not blow shofar this Shabbos. We're worried about what might happen. So what do? You're stuck between a rock and a hard place. So if you're stuck, so the safest approach is Shev Al Tasa. Okay, I cannot make them both happy. I can't follow both what the Torah says when it tells us to blow shofar and what the Torah says when it tells us to listen to the rabbis who told us not to blow shofar. I can't do both of those. So what's safest? What's safest is Shev Al Tasa. I'll stay out of it. So the whole premise is that they're both active at the same time. Right? The mitzvah of the Torah to blow shofar and the mitzvah of the Torah to listen to the rabbis who told you not to blow shofar are both active at the same time. But what if the rabbis actually had the power to rewrite the Torah? What if they could take the mitzvah of shofar off the books on Shabbos? So then you wouldn't have a clash. Right, there's no clash at all. The rabbi said, don't blow shofar this Shabbos. And the Torah said, okay, if that's their plan, we sign on to it. God signs on to it. So then there's no clash. So then why draw any distinction between between Shev Al Tasa and Kum V'Aseh? There's no conflict. I don't have to keep my head down. Everyone agrees I shouldn't be blowing shofar on Shabbos. So then the only way to explain it maybe is because los aseis are more chomer and their power never extended that far. But just passive behavior shouldn't be an issue. I'm not angering anybody. So essentially the three issues all come together. That if you believe that Chazal can actually negate a mitzvah, so then there's no clash here. And the only reason to say Shev Al Tasa must be that their power to negate a mitzvah is limited only to positive mitzvahs. And therefore, the definition is positive mitzvahs versus negative mitzvahs. But if you believe that they don't have the power to to negate a mitzvah. And the mitzvah of shofar is still there. So then, the issue is, we're stuck in a conflict. The Torah says blow shofar, and the rabbis say don't. And the Torah says listen to the rabbis, so we're stuck in a contradiction. So the safest thing is, take sheva al taseh path. And don't actively do anything that could cause problems. And then, our definition is going to be based on behavior. It's based on keeping your head down. It doesn't matter whether you call it nasei or lo sasei. It's about not getting in the line of fire. So all three questions are interconnected. All depend on each other. Everyone follows? It's kind of complex, but it's very elegant structure. They're all basically the same idea. Just to recap, that the question we were talking about till now is the mitzvah there or not. It all impacts on why Sheva Al Tasa would be the path. And why impacts what the words mean. So if the mitzvah is still there, so then we have a clash and we should act B'Sheva Al Tasa, which means act passively. If the mitzvah is not there, then there's no issue of needing to have passive behavior. So if we're drawing the line at Sheva Al Tasa, it must be just because there's a greater chumrah Talosa says, and the rabbis were not able to affect that. Make sense? Everyone with me? Yes? No? More or less? Just say it again? Happy to say it again? Right, basically, question one, is the mitzvah uprooted? That was our topic until now. So if the mitzvah is not uprooted, like Rabbi Akiva Eiger, so we're in a conflict situation. Rabbis are telling us not to blow shofar, but the Torah is still telling us to blow shofar. So the notion of Sheva Al Tasa is about doing the least harm. Keep your head down and don't blatantly contradict one view or the other. Because if we were to blow shofar, we'd make the Torah happy in its original mitzvah, but we'd also make the Torah unhappy by flaunting this desire to flout the Torah's rule of listening to the rabbis. So, to keep out of harm, put our head down. So if the mitzvah is still there, Sheva Al Tasa just means don't get involved in the fight. Sit it out. And then it's a reference to how we behave. Not trying to do anything that's going to inflame the fight here. But if the issue is that the mitzvah is taken away, there's no mitzvah of shofar, so then we don't have to worry about angering anybody. Everybody's on the same side. So Sheva Al Tasa must come from a different consideration, just that the power of the rabbis is limited. They can only impact the Torah to a certain degree, and lo sasseis are more chomer, and therefore that's beyond what they can do. Does that help at all? Makes sense. So just to add one more point to that, and then we'll review. So Rabbi Chanan also points out another issue that you see, and this is something many Sfarim talk about, that the limitation of rabbinic power also manifests itself in a different way. Because you could ask the question, all right, we're concerned that you shouldn't blow shofar on Shabbos because you may come to carry. But if we're concerned about things like that, why don't we say, forget Shabbos. I should never blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Rosh Hashanah, which it does most years. Because Rosh Hashanah is a yontif, right? So Hilchus yontif, there's no prohibition of carrying. That's only a Shabbos consideration. I get it. But there is a prohibition of playing musical instruments on yontif. You're not supposed to be tokea klishir. You're not supposed to play a musical instrument on Shabbos or Yontif because there's a concern you may come to fix it. So carrying is only about Shabbos, but fixing it is about Yontif too. So why didn't the rabbis make another gezeirah? Don't blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Rosh Hashanah. Why didn't they make that gezeirah? So what do you think the answer to that might be? If you had to suggest, why might that be the rule? that they didn't make a gzeira against blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls down on Rosh Hashanah?
There's a direct pasuk that makes a heter.
Okay, that's one possible reason, actually, and that's an important subject in itself, that the question of whether they can contradict explicit psukim is an important one. It's a whole other discussion, but that's definitely possible. It could be for sure. But what's another, maybe even more blatant angle? I'll give you a hint with this question. How often does Rosh Hashanah fall out on Rosh Hashanah in our calendar? Yes, Velvo.
What do you mean? Like twice a year.
Right, twice a year. Okay, 2 days a year, right?
On the same time.
Always. Basically, Rosh Hashanah always falls out on Rosh Hashanah.
That was a pretty confident hand raise also.
Yes, that was awesome. So you see, because that was a pretty straightforward question. It just sounded like a trick question, right? So you don't have to know the calendar by heart to know that Rosh Hashanah always falls out on Rosh Hashanah. So the impact of saying, don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, what impact would that have on the mitzvah of shofar? It would wipe it out totally. And that would mean that the Torah, which is related to what Akiva said before, it means the Torah says blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And the rabbi said, no, never do that. So that we don't find. We don't find there's a whole mitzvah that the rabbis just canceled. The rabbis say, don't put tzitzis on shatnez. That's fine. It leaves you with many garments to have tzitzis on that aren't shatnez. The rabbi said, don't take a lulav on Shabbos, it's fine. It leaves you with all the other years when Sukkot is not Shabbos. But if they were to say, don't ever blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Rosh Hashanah, that would mean the mitzvah of the Torah disappears. And that much authority they don't have. Which is more than we were discussing. That's one thing to discuss the detail of the mitzvah of shofar applying on Shabbos. Can they undo that? But here we're saying, beyond that, can they take away shofar completely? So that, presumably not. To say that we're going to make a gzeira that's going to undo the mitzvah in its totality, that much power they don't have. But to say that they have authority of a detail in a mitzvah, even though that detail becomes it's a Torah obligation, that much fine. But to totally wipe it out, that they can't do. Now, why that is an interesting thought. And it may have to do with the parameters of specifics of shofar on Shabbos, which is its own sugya that we haven't seen at all yet. The Gemara specifically does address the details of the relationship between shofar and Shabbos. So that very specific topic we should look at before Rosh Hashanah, so that's what we have tomorrow for. So God willing, we will look at the sources that deal with this specifically tomorrow and get a broader perspective on that. So just to quickly recap, what did we talk about? So we saw that we have to ponder the question of what does Sheva Al Tasa mean, which impacts a lot of areas in Halacha, or at least three. It impacts this one, what is subject to Akiras Davar Min HaTorah and what isn't. When does Kavod HaBrios win? The Gemara says it can prevail over Torah law if it's B'Sheva Al Tasa. And the rule of spending money on mitzvos that distinguishes between positive mitzvos, only 20% according to the Rama, and Averos, which require whatever it takes. So three areas, each one may have its own answer, but three areas where this question comes up, how do we define Sheva Al Tasa? So we saw that it seems to be a machlokas rishonim, and that Tosfos brings up the issue by tzitzis because the behavior seems to be active. The Shagas Aryeh says, who cares? The mitzvah is a positive one. It doesn't matter whether your behavior is active or not. And it seems to be a rashba l'shitaso three times, because with the conflict between Sheva Brachos and Avelus, which according to some Rishonim involves a day that's Daraisa, so the Ran and the Rashba both say that this is Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, but the Ran says, only act passively that first day. Don't go to any parties the first day. And the Rashba doesn't say it, presumably because the Ran sees it about behavior, and the Rashba sees it as categorically. The positive mitzvah of Avelus is undone. While the Rashba also has a comment in Rosh Hashanah that if Chazal told you to do a mitzvah twice, it's not Baal Tosef, because we see it parallels. They can tell us not to do a mitzvah, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, and that's not Baal Tigra. So the Turi Evan says, how do you know? Maybe they uprooted Baal Tigra also. So apparently, no, he's seeing it categorically, and Baal Tigra's Alosa say that's not within their power. And the Rashba is also going to have a different answer to the Gemara in Gittin. It says that Chazal could ordain Shemitah's Ksafim Midrabana, and they can make a rabbinic rule to cancel loans, even though that puts the borrower in a position of low sigzal, because Rashi says, oh yeah, based on the Gemara, Rashi says, Sheva al Tase, it's included within Yesh Koach. And the Rashba will have to, as he does, interpret it differently, because that's a low sase, it doesn't matter that you're passive, you're not robbing a bank, it's in your pocket, it doesn't help, because it's still a low sase of low sigzal. So that was all a part of that question of how do we define it. And then we saw that that also impacts the question of why. Why is that distinction? So if the distinction is there because we're stuck in a conflict, so then it comes out that you should keep your head down and just be passive to not get involved in a conflict any more than you need to. But that's all premised on the assumption that there's a conflict, that the mitzvah is still there. Like Rabbi Akiva Eiger said yesterday, that the mitzvah of shofar is still present. While if you say that it's not there, like the Chalkes Yaov and others, that the mitzvah is uprooted, so there's no conflict. So then why do we have the Sheval Taisa rule in the first place? Maybe it's not about our behavior, it's just about how much power Chazal have to impact different mitzvos. And Losa says there are more chomer that's not within their authority. And we saw another limit in their authority, that their limit is really only on details and not on entire mitzvos, presumably. Because otherwise, maybe they would have made a gzeira not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, not just when it falls out on Shabbos, but even when it falls out on Rosh Hashanah. Because there's a reason to prohibit shofar then also, like every other yontif, when you can't play a trumpet on yontif, because we're worried that you may come to fix it. So we should say also, you can't blow shofar midrabanan on Rosh Hashanah either. So they wouldn't say that, because that would be a complete negating of a mitzvah in its totality. And that's out of their power. And how exactly shofar specifically does interact with Shabbos, so that we still have to see a little bit more, and that's on our agenda for tomorrow. Okay, so I wish you all a wonderful day. So continue to be safe and healthy as we count the days down to Rosh Hashanah. These last few days of the year should be meaningful and spiritually uplifting at the same time as they are safe and protected. And God willing, I will see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow. All right. Enjoy.